Jess and I have gotten to know each other over many ferry trips and living in the same neighborhood, and lots of great conversations about our teaching experiences. I think you're probably, you know, we're in the 30 plus, each of us, in our different careers. And so she's working on her PhD at UVic, and so invited me to speak to actually her class, was it last year? Collaborative and proactive problem solving with Ross Green stuff. So I did a little bit of that in my previous district. But I am retired, and so I've only been retired for a year. But prior to that, I worked for most of my career in Alberta and worked as a supervisor of a multidisciplinary team that supported a swath of the city. Edmonton is a very large school division. It has 215 schools, and so each of our teams supported about 25 schools. And so I oversaw that team that is, you know, the psychologist, the social worker, speech and language, occupational therapists. And so we basically supported all of the kids in those 25 schools, and I sort of triaged referrals, I guess, is what happened, and supported those conversations at schools around some of the kids that have needs. So looking at, you know, can we just do some classroom observations, and maybe some consultants will go into the room and just try some recommendations, or do we need to bump it up to, you know, psychological assessment or whatever that is. So that's sort of what I did for the last 10 or so years in Edmonton.
And so I've been a teacher since early 2000s, and I've just worked in the school district in Gulf Islands. I mainly taught the intermediate range and had a few different positions here in the Gulf Islands. I'm still a TTOC here and the ProD chair for the district. And I've been involved in ProD for quite a while, and as being a part of doing my PhD at UVic, I've had some awesome opportunities, and one of my favorite ones is working in the teacher ed program, so working with our soon-to-be teachers on topics not solely on this, but that relate to this. So we were thinking in preparing for this presentation, that we were not mental health experts, but we have some background in what we kind of referred to later as, like, you know, like universal supports or things that we could all be doing, you know, for youth mental health and for our own mental health. And what we've kind of experienced in that, as in that role of for myself as a teacher and educator, and Kyla's role in the, you know, in the district office, around knowing when to kind of go for looking for more help than we can, you know, like as a teacher, I'm not trained as a psychologist, obviously. So knowing when we need to look for help, what are those little red flags or things that we're looking for and to support youth. So we were thinking we'd start with just a local research study that happens every year in BC, and I chose this one kind of in response to that like kind of wanting to know how our kids are doing through COVID. And so they don't have this year's report is not the full report's not out. All the district reports are out, but the last year's report, like, that looked specifically at students going from 2020 to 2021, so they could see some of the impacts of COVID on that. And it's unique. It's just a BC study through our school districts. And there's lots of research for sure out there, hey, about COVID impacting, like, all of our mental health, but for sure our youth. And then we have a number of resources and strategies that follow from that, and also kind of embody some of the things that we were, recommending and also facilitating as far as police and in classes and in district office. And then we just end with some questions. So. Yeah. We also wanted to just check that this was hitting the mark for folks, that this was okay.
Yeah, because I mean, we are teachers, right? And we wanted to be really clear about that. We're not mental health experts at all, but just with our collective experience, you know, we've come across some great resources, and that's kind of what we've shared in this presentation, is some of the things that we've come across with in our, basically knowing a lot of different specialists in the field and the things that they've recommended too, and some of our own professional learning over the years as well. So, yeah, do you want to go to the research?
Yeah. Oh, sure. Starting that. So the research that I looked at for this was the Middle Years Development Instrument. It's out of UBC, and it's out of the UBC School of Population and Public Health. It's a partnership. And I don't know if anyone here remembers our principal from years ago, Ty Benfett. His supervisor, well, he did his PhD, has been the lead researcher for this instrument for years. She's now gone to Chicago, so I don't know what's happening next. But anyway, so she's been in depth the driving force behind this. So basically, it's optional. Many of our school districts have signed up. Many of our independent schools have signed up. So we're about 40,000 students, grades 4 to 8, who have this, and they can choose to record these in different ways. So sometimes they might do year to year, and others will choose just to follow a cohort, a specific cohort, to see how they're doing. And it's just it's a real check-in on their well-being, their social emotional competence. They check in on mental and physical health. And they can also, in this case, assess influences of large scale events like COVID. They could see, use those results because they've been going on for so many years now. They could really, see any differences, I guess, from this last year. So,
take a look at that.
Oh, so the main findings
wait
were.
Wait a minute, it says remind me later.
Adobe wants to.
There we go. Ah! Oh no. What happened?
I can close
there?
That out.
It's in. It's just in presenter mode.
Oh.
I can.
Yeah, so there's them up there.
Okay. There we go. Okay.
Yeah. So the key findings were that our older students were reporting lower levels of well-being compared to previous years, whereas our younger students were actually doing okay, and it was just slightly higher, like 1% higher than previous years. And early on, I saw a presentation of this research right when it was coming out, and it really was really amazing to the final report, because I couldn't quite guarantee this, but there was some speculation that it was partly from being around family more, because this is all through that lockdown period, and online schooling, and all sorts of things. So there was some speculation, but they couldn't quite, that was earlier, so it didn't make it to the final report, but that was just something that was interesting. And the other thing they look at are assets in students' lives, their kids' lives. So those assets are their connectedness to adults. So that would be like questions around, do you have someone you can speak to if you're going through something? And is that a community person, a family member, a friend? And then they kind of rank it. So you can see the shift of that in any year, really, from when our grade 4-5s to when our grade 7-8s become more about our friends, hey, that we confide in rather than our family, but how important it is to have those important adults in school, in community, in family, that sort of thing. So that's huge. They also ask questions around nutrition and sleep, positive school experiences, and like kind of the self-efficacy in school, the self-esteem, that sort of thing. And then after school activities. And here they're just looking for how they're spending their time, basically, like after school, what they're doing. So what they've found is there's sometimes these are kind of, I was thinking some of the things we're going to talk about related to this research are called like protective factors. So things that are in kids' lives that really relate to that feeling of well-being. And they found that these four things are what they ask, and those are tied always to well-being. So we can see even within the instrument that the more assets a student or a child identifies in their life, the higher the well-being that they usually have. So there's a strong correlation to that. So this is where we were thinking, is the most important part, hey, is the, how can we help support youth with some of these protective factors or assets. Yeah. And we're teachers, so we'll talk like the whole time. If you have any questions or anything or clarification questions, please just shout it out. We both taught middle school, so you don't have to put your hand up or anything. We're used to that. Yeah. The next slide is just looking at some of the assets in more detail. And about how the middle years instrument shows this, that there's generally a sense of there's a decline in well-being generally between those younger students in grade 4-5 and our older students in grade 7 and 8. We've seen that. You see that all the time. And so that was they were expecting to see that. It's just they saw it even more. After going through that lockdown through COVID. And they have speculation as to what that is. And one of it was. More screen time for the after-school activities, and there's that association between increased screen time, and depending on what they're doing on the screen, and lower what sense of well-being. And also, I was thinking too, something you might have read about is we saw that huge increase in eating disorders in our high school students last year, and I'm looking at another brief report about that. They were tying that to the increased school time or screen time, because that was how they were connecting with their friends when they're used to connecting, you know, in person. But and a lot of it was through social media, and it just seemed to be like almost a perfect storm paid for body image issues and stress and things like that. So that what they did notice too, one of the findings was the after school activities were obviously very different in that year 2020 to 2021, because a lot of things weren't offered because of COVID or they were having, so there was definitely much more screen time at that time. And I guess this was just from the New Brunswick Health Council, so it shows some of the same protective factors and kind of links to why they're looking for nutrition and sleep, like social activities, physical activity, that sort of thing. So those are the things I always think that we can, like as teachers, that we need to think about, right? That especially those positive school experiences, and even in my community, thinking about connectedness to our youth here, and just keeping an eye on them, and if we can, providing positive after school activities, that sort of thing. So.
Mm-hmm.
So
when you say afternoon,
after school
activities, are those activities that a student would immediately go into that are sort of tied with the school?
Sometimes.
Sort of like you know, sports or
yeah.
something like that.
Yeah.
Does it include things like, you know, going to, you know, scouts or guides
yeah.
that night?
Yeah.
So it's all, it's a
yeah, they'll kind of ask, like, you know, sort of things, what you're doing in the evenings and
okay.
you know, how often do you do that? And, you know, and even how are you getting to and from school? So are you, you know, are you going to a friend's house after school, and how often do you do that? Or, you know, how often are you going straight home? That sort of thing.
Okay.
And what would you like to be doing? And it was interesting because I was looking at Gulf Islands actually for this year, and our students reported quite high levels of after-school activities, which was I thought was pretty neat. In small places, all our small communities
mm-hmm.
are able to provide, yeah.
That's interesting.
Support that way. Yeah, very good on nutrition and sleep, actually. Yeah, very well.
Mm-hmm. And I'm TTOCing in the school division now too, because. Well, you didn't talk me into it. I just thought, I was like, do I want to do this? Anyway, so yeah, it's just interesting now that I'm in the school on the island and have a little bit of context around that. Yeah, yeah. The one resource that we took a look at sort of related to the protective factors, and this is sort of just a general resource, but a really good reminder, I think, is this HealthLink BC and you know, going in there and just taking a look at some of the very general, you know, very easy things that we can do. And I think sometimes we, you know, and I didn't know how many people were going to be parents here and who the audience was going to be, but just also thinking about resources for parents, checking out this, and I took the little screenshot from there, but each of those little areas, connect, be active, link to the research that Jess is talking about. Really, they have some very wonderful, tangible, simple, easy activities for parents to do with their kids. And in some ways, we kind of know, like we, you know, we all say, you know, kind of know what we should be doing. It's kind of like we know how we should be eating. Do we always do that? You know, so maybe not necessarily, right? So there's just some great reminders in here. And I did click on the five ways to well-being, and in there are some great examples. I can click on that and share, but even so, we're going to share the presentation, but this is just open to everybody, right? But there's some great reminders, some very general things, and I think in our speaking notes, I was going to talk about, you know, as a parent, because I have three kids, pre-COVID, they're all now married, and, you know, hopefully, going to start having their own kids. But one of the things that I did with my kids for the summer, because also being a teacher, and I'm reminded of this from them, which is, you're a teacher, does everybody do this? But we would sit down together at the beginning of the summer, and we would brainstorm, you know, okay, so what are all the things that, you know, you can do? What are all the things that you can come up with that you can do? Whether it's playing a game, whether it's, and I mean, for them, it was like,
and they talk about this now, even that they're in their late 20s, 30s, like building a fort, you know, Hot Wheels and a fort, Barbies and a fort, you know, like all the things that we can do. And then we wrote them all out, and then we put them on the fridge. And the fridge was sort of the, you know, the hub of the home, the kitchen or whatever. And so then anytime it was like, well, you know, what can I do? Well, there's the fridge, you know what I mean? And so it always worked well because they contributed to what they could do. And they always came up with, so they couldn't really, you know, argue that there wasn't anything on that list that they couldn't do, right? So that's just another, it's a simple example, but it was an example that I think, you know, kind of going back to the basics of you know, having the kids contribute and also very easy things to do, right? So, and playing a game, you know, like I think, and actually I just want to say, there's this, one of my favorite stores in Edmonton, which is called The Prince and the Paper, which is a specialty book store, games, lots of different kinds of things there. And that first year of COVID, it was his busiest year ever. And I was like, I was so happy to hear that because it was all about games, books, everything, right, that was away from screen time. And he did deliveries. That's probably helped. But, you know, it's just amazing. So there's a lot of positive things, right, that have come out that take us, because I think kids are, they're tired of always being on screen, right? So it's a little bit... It's there's been some positives that have come out of it. I wanted to add this particular image in here because I'm sort of using our teacher language and our experience. And I didn't know how many parents were going to be in the audience, but sometimes it's good to know what the language is, you know, that's happening in the school in terms of a pyramid of support. And so this is the language that educators will use in terms of providing support for kids, whether that's mental health support or whatever that looks like. It's about just knowing what the pyramid of support is for people and knowing that it's about organizing supports and not necessarily organizing students. So what we do is we look at, you know, the universal level is basically what is good practice in a classroom in terms of supports that are there for all students, that they can benefit from that. And then making sure that, you know, things like, you know, organizing the seating in your classroom so that, you know, it's effective. You have a place maybe where you have a standing workstation for some kids. Tape on the floor, you know, they have a place to stand and work because they work better that way. Maybe you have some beanbag chairs or whatever, but that's a very universal way of organizing your classroom for some of those supports. And then as you move up into the more targeted areas, that's where you may be doing some, you know, some small group work on very specific skills. You might have some interventions and supports happening in there. And same with when we look at mental health supports, right? We're looking at what can we do as a class-wide activity that's going to be universal that all kids are going to benefit from? And then, you know, as we move up the pyramid, there may be some small groups, little interventions. Maybe there's a group of kids that just needs some very targeted skills in a particular area for social skills. So you might take that group and it might be working on a particular skill, whether it's, okay, turn-taking, you know, something like that. But we're very much targeting the small group to work on that. And then if you hear people talking about kind of bumping up the pyramid and into more of the specialized realm, that's where we're probably looking at a higher level of support that some kids may need. And that's where, at least for the division that I come from, that's where we may be referring to, you know, maybe a mental health consultant or a psychologist or a social worker that can maybe do some help and support at that level, whether that's connecting with family. You know, maybe there's housing issues and maybe there's some other kinds of trauma things going on in that house. So that's where we look at support kind of at the very top. And that might be referring out. You and I spoke about that. You know, if we can't get that support in the school, that's when we're maybe connecting with outside resources and a psychologist, psychiatrist, or whatever that looks like. So, you know, just understanding, and we've, Jess and I have talked about this, but knowing our boundaries, so we've been very clear that we are not mental health experts, but we know our boundaries and kind of where we you know, understand what best practices in terms of some of those universal supports, but knowing when it's time to maybe bump it up, or even, you know, when there is maybe a little bit of a crisis going on and maybe who to access. So it's just, I think, really good to know that that's what many schools do in terms of how they operate, in terms of providing support in all realms. Like, so we're talking about mental health tonight, but we also could be talking about, you know, complex needs, autism. You know, some kids with autism really can operate very well with universal strategies, but, you know, there may be kids that when we bump up the pyramid need some other levels of support. And sometimes it means, you know, we're operating right at the top of the pyramid for kids with autism. So, you know, working with kids that require a lot, right? So it just depends. And then understanding, we didn't want to go too much into this, and I think we said, like, understanding the mental health versus mental illness. I think there's some great links through HealthLink to maybe understand a little bit more about what the difference is and some of those red flags that we're looking for. I know in my role in Alberta, a lot of what I did was to triage what is sort of coming at, because I mean, 25 schools and people, you know, freaking out and things happening, and especially during COVID with, you know, chaos, mm-hmm. and basic needs not being met, right? Mm-hmm. But just basic needs for families. I think my husband and I sat through the first year of COVID and looked at each other and said, like, I'm feeling super lucky. Mm-hmm. I don't have kids at home, number one. I have a job. I'm working. I have a paycheck, right? Like, and all the people that we were surrounded with just going through some of those very basic needs not being met. So, I don't know. I just think we wanted to bring in this language just to be able to talk about what you may be hearing in schools. And
yeah, and I'm thinking too, just some of the things that we talk about with the teachers is just that understanding too that if we have a child with mental illness, they can have great mental health, right? Like that it's not distinct from each other, right? The mental illness is not you have thriving mental health and have a mental illness. It's the same. I can have really low or low well-being and not have, you know, a mental illness. They're not tied, but a thriving mental health benefits all of us, no matter what sort of health condition we might have. And so, and I guess I'm thinking here too, when we talk about know where to go next, and as a teacher, it's like just really some of those red flags to look for. And when we were talking about it, sometimes it's really just simply, you know, the student who is quite talkative becomes really quiet, you know, and that's where you start investigating a little bit and asking at home, are you noticing this too? And other people, and starting to ask them, you know, some questions, maybe conferencing with the student, and knowing when it is maybe time to see if they'd be interested, right, in accessing some other supports if they're going through something difficult. And I think, too, especially for mental health, I was thinking a lot of our supports are going to be temporal. And I was thinking about how, you know, as an adult, you know, I've definitely been in this zone, you know, at some time in my life that needed to go to counseling and other things, or other things I was doing to try and help. And then, you know, back to my, let's say, feel more, you know, back to universal support, so keeping myself well. And same with our kids, I feel like, hey, that it's not always forever, it's could just be a time period. But that these supports should be available to all our students, maybe is the key, is the hope, right?
Mm-hmm. A little harder on these Gulf Islands, I'm noticing it's a little more difficult, right? Because everything is, it's, you know, so spread out, right? So it's, yeah. Okay.
And I guess the last thing we had to remember later too, but is that noticing, you know, that something's not quite right, the wondering, like, and just that curiosity rather than, like, as teachers, you're not going to go up to a parent and say, I think your kid's depressed, right? That's like, you know, it's not our role, it's not our job. And same with, you know, my role as a, I'm not a parent, but I have a lot of little people in my life that are very important, so I wouldn't do the same to them, you know, but I might ask the question, oh, I was noticing, have you noticed that too? And is there something I can help with? Those sorts of things that we could do as a community, I think, to help all our, mm-hmm. our little people, yeah.
Yeah, I think a lot of, you're going to, well, we talked about what are the overarching kind of things that we wanted to talk about, and very much the idea of noticing, wonder, curiosity, as opposed to presuming, is a big part of what I think she and I really wanted to, you know, share, is that, because I think probably we talked about this too, my biggest mistake as a teacher and as a parent is deciding that I know what the issue is, mm-hmm. and then I'll tell you what the solution is.
So, mm-hmm.
you know, I think I've done that, yeah, mm-hmm. many times. So mm-hmm. I think yeah. that's probably a thing that we really wanted to share today, is that that's certainly something that I've done a lot of, and I have learned that, you know, it's more effective, right, to notice or, you know, rather than say, I think this is what's going on. Like you say, I think, you know, I think mm-hmm. your child is depressed or whatever. That's not in our lane to know, but mm-hmm. certainly we notice there's something going on, right? So then knowing who to access.
With the behaviors. And,
yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Maybe we're reporting them a little bit too, whatever. That also helps mm-hmm. as well for the referral process.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And just for our notes too, so you know, mm-hmm. it's not just an off day. It's a mm-hmm. it's reoccurring.
There's a pattern.
There's a pattern to it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Noting things is a good idea too. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. This is a resource that I wanted to share with this group. I heard Lynn Lyons speak when I was working in the Victoria School District, and we went to the mental health conference in Vancouver. And she's one of the, like, when you think about anxiety, I know I was I first listened to Ross Green, and he's quite the speaker, if you've ever heard him talk about collaborative and proactive. And so then she was next, and so I was sitting there thinking, I'm going to stay for her session, and, you know, I'm not really sure what it's not like I know everything, but I was like, I was in that mindset, right? Like, what is she going to say that's, you know, going to, you know, teach me something about anxiety or whatever? And so I stayed, I listened, and I had so many aha moments listening to her. So I really wanted to share this resource for parents that are coming to this. And I mean, I've shared it with many parents, you know, in my role. But there are so many things that I didn't expect in terms of listening to her, but I pulled out some of the normal expected strategies that, again, I know we spoke about that we have done, right? Which is stepping in to fix the problem, accommodating. We do that a lot in the school system, right? And we accommodate, we do that as parents. Overprotection, stepping in quickly, reassurance. External reassurance is something that she spoke about as being something that might work, you know, in the short term, but is not really that effective in the long term. Avoidance, right? So we've got a lot of kids that are school avoidant that has, you know, over the course of the pandemic, that is a huge, huge issue. I don't know about here, but in our division, we hired social workers specifically for calling families and meeting up, going for coffee, figuring out what's going on, why are their kids not going to school.
Mm-hmm.
We had huge numbers of kids not going to school. So mm-hmm. avoidance is huge. Mm-hmm. Expressing worry and fear, but the context that she talks about is quite different. It's not that it's not okay to express worry and fear, but she calls it the safety chatter. So I just think as a resource for parents, I just thought this was amazing. And there's so many things in there that I feel like even after 30 years of teaching, that I learned and unlearned listening to her and looking at some of the things that she talked about. And in particular, you know, that accommodation, overprotection, and stepping in quickly all the time, rather than just, again, sitting back and letting kids do some of that figuring out for themselves. I shared an example with Jess about this when I was teaching middle school, and when I was the math teacher, but I was also the art teacher. And so I distinctively remember kids working in art and always, you know, always, like, needing that reassurance. What do you think? What do you think about what I'm doing? What do you think about what I'm making? You know, what do you think about this? You know, do you like it? Or, you know, it was always seeking, right? And I would always, almost always, just put it back on them, basically. So what do you think? You know, how do you feel about it? It's not important, but I think. And that is really, even just at the very basic level of teaching art, it was so interesting to me how they were seeking that. And so in the same way, right, when we're talking about anxieties and things like that, some of the things that she works through is working with your teen and saying, you know, I don't know, what do you think?
You know, what do you think about that? Sounds like, and she says, it sounds like worry talking. What would you say to that worry, right? So, and to not avoid, but to just lean in and then figure out how to go through with it, whether it's, you know, exposing yourself in small ways, but to just, you know, to not avoid. And as a behavior consultant, I think many times I would be trying to support people to do some of that accommodating and to have those safe spaces or whatever. But I remember clearly her saying, if you have a safe space that you go to, what does that say about all the rest of the space? So it just was a bit of a, I was like, oh, I never really thought about it that way. Mm-hmm. So I don't know, I just think it's an amazing book, and there's so many things about anxiety that I personally learned listening to her, so I just, I really wanted to bring it into this conversation, so that you guys, if you didn't already know, so I see some of you nodding that you might already be familiar with her, but she's amazing. Sorry, we already kind of talked a little bit about this. Reassurance and anxiety, short-term decrease, long-term increase. Again, I spoke about that with the team, but, you know, the other thing is being unsure and uncomfortable on purpose. So putting ourselves in situations, right? But then it's not about just, you know, abandoning, but it's about figuring out how do I work through this? And if I'm uncomfortable, I'm not sure what I'm doing. Even for, I don't know about you, Jess, but public speaking is not really my favorite thing to do. So, you know, but making sure that you're, well, that we're basically prepared and that we're not huge fans of it, feeling a little bit anxious, but we're going to do it anyways, right? So, and for us, it was about really making sure that we connected, that we tell you kind of what we're, our experience is, where our lane is, what we're, our strengths are, but also what we're not, right? So, yeah, just basically being uncomfortable, but doing it anyways and supporting kids to do that, so.
I have a question for you, Kyla. With the COVID, the way it was, I mean, avoidance became so easy. I mean, it was such a natural default for all of us. I mean, everybody turned on Netflix and just popped the popcorn, you know? And so how, and that becomes normal. And so we've got this, you know, huge group of youth that are, you know, we're normalizing this whole thing. And so now this opening up again, like social anxiety must be just huge for people, you know? Yeah.
Or I'm just thinking of some teachers noticing some of those, especially in our younger years, our kindergartens and grade ones, is how to do that extra social skills, extra thinking, extra socializing in our kindergarten and grade one classes, just because they were noticing they really didn't get a lot of that through their grade, their year five, year four, year five before they came in. For that, yeah, and I was thinking, but we all, like, collectively, we're all kind of going through that too right now,
yes.
And it's a different context too, because we do have real, and I was thinking about, like, that you have anxiety, right, that we're not reassuring, like if someone's nervous about COVID, it doesn't work to go, oh, it's fine, don't worry, like that, and that doesn't help anyone when you have anxiety, right, there's no reassurance, but to listen to the person talk about that, right, or to, and also the idea of not avoiding it, right, but maybe pausing from something, and until I can build up some skills or some strategies or do some learning or do some practicing, and then, you know, and then going, leaning into it again, as we were talking about. So I feel like, that's, and I was thinking, like, in the last few, years of teaching, we've had so many great resources as teachers, I found, around, like, programs on, like, social thinking, that's become universal. Social thinking was often, you know, for our students who maybe don't understand social situations that well, but it's obviously very helpful for all of us. Like, I use it sometimes. And for our younger students, so many, we'll talk later about some of the strategies that we've, you know, we've brought in, and it's just become more and more a part of the curriculum of schools, is that social emotional learning. So I think a response is most likely to ramp that up.
That's great.
In the next through this period.
That's
and
really
we can
good.
All probably benefit.
Honestly.
Adults, right?
There's a few nurses in the room, and healthcare providers don't know how to socialize. Really, in situations, in professional situations, there's avoidance, and all of these behaviors show up in adults, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and I think, like, just speaking from my 2 years of living in big city Edmonton through COVID and looking at what families were going through, sometimes, you know, not coming to school is all they could do.
Mm-hmm.
Because there was, you know, like we had parent deaths of COVID in the beginning, mm-hmm. right? Gotcha. Because, I mean, that was, you know, mm-hmm. that was when we had no vaccination, right? Mm-hmm. So we had significant issues going on with people losing their jobs and not having enough to eat. And, you know, so I think it was in the second year that we looked at trying to bring some social workers on to because we were all just thinking, this is unbelievable, mm-hmm. right? It's just unbelievable what families are going through. Mm-hmm. So reminding ourselves that, you know, it's that Maslow's hierarchy of basic needs. Like, we're not getting some of the basic needs met in some of these families. So not coming to school is almost to be expected at this point because they're not coping. And, you know, older kids looking after younger kids, and that's all they can do because that's the way they're going to get a paycheck, right? Like, that's how mom's going to get a paycheck or whatever. So it's recognizing. And now, so now we kind of thought, we're, you know, the pandemic has been, it's just been nutso, right, with what we've been living with. So it's like, now what are we doing? And we are seeing, you know, resilience in you know, a lot of, you know, coming through that, right? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, but...
I was thinking too, like, and we see this in the schools, and it's getting talked more and more, but we all know that COVID really exposed inequities, mm-hmm. and that, you know, as you're saying, we're lucky, we're very privileged to have jobs, and mm-hmm. Many of our communities are not, right? And those are the communities that were definitely the hardest hit, and, you know, throughout this, especially our students. Mm-hmm. And that became so apparent. Mm-hmm. Especially in the school districts. School districts organizing food, you know, for some and devices that people didn't have devices or internet mm-hmm. right at home, but it definitely exposed a lot of that. And I think that's also become a real part of bringing social emotional learning into classrooms too, is really looking at some of those inequities or trying to address them as best you can in the classrooms, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know if you're familiar with this website too, which is Anxiety Canada, and then Anxiety in Youth. Again, there is just a wealth of resources at your fingertips just on this website. I know when I was in Alberta, I would always go to Anxiety BC. So there's just like you have amazing resources here. So I just wanted to bring that up as well. And I, again, looking up there's an app called the Mind Shift app, which again, that's technology. So didn't know if I wanted to bring that up or not, but there are some real benefits to that too, right? So
I think quite a few teachers I know use that.
Yeah.
Mind Shift app and use some activities from it. And some youth who have started using it too. It's been really great for folks suffering with anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
It has some skills, kind of like a moment to like to check in. Mm-hmm. And then it also kind of has we're trying to reprogram, you know, our thoughts. So I have this thought, it's going to be horrible, you know, and I go, how likely is that to happen? And what if we have, what are your positive thoughts you could, so it kind of helps frame that for
mm-hmm.
For these, yeah, so I've heard some good things definitely
mm-hmm.
about that.
Yeah.
I think when you start it, it gets you to breathe deeply too, before you come into mm-hmm. it.
This is just...
Yeah, this is just something that one of our profs had kind of endorsed from UVic, so for our work with youth and insight, and just some you know, suggestions around how to support a little person with anxiety or stress and anxious thoughts, you know, different ways of maybe using your body to get it out, to talk about it. Like you were saying, what would you say to your worry, to draw it? I was thinking about the matching your breath to mine, and how there's that idea about how we co-regulate, you know, with youth, right, and how this is a really, you know, that way of how we can have, that's what we do with newborns, right, to kind of regulate their breathing, but just to take a minute to come back down. And then, yeah, just think about some endings, what could happen, some really hilarious ones, or I know another strategy that, you know, is the three parts, so the oh, I'm really anxious, you know, about something, you know, maybe doing a presentation in school or something like that. And the parent might ask, well, what's the worst thing that could possibly happen? So you have this amazing, elaborate, horrible thing that could happen, right? And then what's the best thing that could happen? And then, you know, the crowd goes wild at the end or whatever. And then what's most likely to happen? Just to kind of try and find that balance in there. And then other things, yeah, I was thinking about is like doing a 5-4-3-2-1, and I get this always mixed up, but it's around our five senses. So it's a kind of way of grounding in the moment. So five things I can see, four things I can touch, three things I can hear, two things I can smell, one thing I could taste, just to kind of, yeah, ground us again. And I think the next one is when we were talking about specific, like, social-emotional strategies. So I was thinking for these, there's kind of two parts to it. So the emotional awareness and then the action that you might take. And the idea is that we want our young people to be able to recognize this. So I just brought some examples of what were you seeing in schools or you seeing in schools. And so CASEL, and I don't know what the acronyms mean, but they are very well known and really, really highly regarded in this area. Around social-emotional learning for parents and for schools to work with youth. So they're working on that self-awareness, self-management, relationship skills, social awareness, responsible decision-making. And so we have a lot of resources on their website. And so I started with just like some visuals that you might see up in a classroom and you can use at home. Or I like using this one in my life. But the zones of regulation is a very popular program that teachers use. And it's really just about identifying how I'm feeling by kind of naming it, like a zone, and with a color, because it's fun. So the red zone is when I'm gone. You know, I'm out of control. I'm just too angry. I'm too sad, or something. It's usually a feeling that I have an intense frustration. I'm out of control if I'm in the red zone. And then the yellow zone is where I can just tell I'm just in the middle there. I'm feeling a little goofy. You know, and I was just trying to think of scenarios where, you know, you can just sense things are just going to go off. You can sense that that's the yellow zone. They're just a little tired or, emotional about something. Maybe they're upset and they're just trying to hold it in, you know, until the last thing and then it just blows up. The green zone is where we want to be, which is feeling calm and content and where we get our best learning and best interactions with people in our green zone. And the blue zone is where I've been bored. Maybe a little sad, a little down, it's cloudy, so I'm just noticing I have lower energy, that sort of thing. Anyway, so the idea behind it is that we learn the zones together, we practice it, it's up in the classroom, you know, a student can acknowledge I'm in the yellow zone, I need to go do this, or I feel like, you know, or if you're, oh, I see that you are having big feelings, are you in the red zone? What are some strategies you'd like to do to help work through that? So it's a way that the first part is that like that self-regulation part. And the emotion skill I would use, well, for anyone, but especially our older students too, if it just takes an emotion like anger and then kind of breaks it down a little bit into, like aggression. And, you know, and then going a little bit further, it's kind of like just getting more refined with how I'm feeling. So maybe I'm jealous. About something, right? So it's kind of a way of, I've got this emotion and I'm going to try and work to refining what it is. That's going to help to tell me why I'm feeling that way. And then also, what's really important to connect to this is like, what will I do? What will I do next to help myself through that? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So far, so good. I think that we have, okay. Okay, so the important part for me is just that we've got students. In some way, able to identify an emotion. And sometimes you can't, you don't know, right? Sometimes you're just angry, like, I don't know. And often I find students can be in that way, right? And there's like strategies like doing a timeline. You know, when you draw a line on a paper and ask them to go back and what happened until. And usually they start over here, you know, someone hit me. But way back here, something happened, right? That was leading all the way up to it. So just doing things like that can kind of help.
And sometimes for kids, like the less language they have, the more important it is to have those visuals.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like a big thing now is having, I don't know if you've seen that, like core boards of vocabulary where they have them in a playground.
even. Mm-hmm. Some playgrounds are doing that, which I think is amazing. Mm-hmm. Because then that supports kids who are struggling with their language to be able to have access to a visual that can help them mm-hmm. communicate. And then you might, you know, have reduced anxiety or reduced frustration because they can't get it out, so they're going to have a way of expressing that. So that's one of the other reasons why we brought in some of these visuals, and especially, you know, classrooms using that, right?
Are they using things like facial expressions and the work that a lot of students or teachers are doing at younger grades especially, but you can go all the way through, right, around recognizing facial expressions and others, but also knowing that, yeah, this is how I'm feeling right now, yeah.
Where would we get a copy of the information?
Oh, I found it everywhere, almost anywhere. I think I just typed in feelings wheel or emotion wheel, and there's quite a few different ones, you know, online. But yeah, I think I was starting to think of, I can't think of like one that would be the recommended one. I would almost, some of them are slightly mm-hmm. different. I would find one you like, actually, because you can start with your kind of core emotions and make sure those are ones that you, yeah, want to explore. But there's quite a few out there. They definitely blossomed in
and we're going to share this too, so you will have that exact one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we're going to share it through a couple different means, I think. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. And then you had there with the zones.
Yeah, because we'll share the slides, so all the links will be available if you open them on your email. So here's just an example of that, you know, we're developing that awareness with our youth, and then but also having a toolbox. Mm-hmm. And I often think of it as like the list on Kyla's fridge, that's something we can do together. Like, so I might do it with a class. You know, here are some things we can do when we need to, when we're in a yellow zone. And here's some things we can do as a family, or here's some things that I know I can do, you know, and we just make a list of them, knowing that we really want our students or our kids to work through that, you know, with help, working through that emotional awareness. They might need to talk about it, but that they get to choose what strategy they're going to use. So that, again, like we were saying, it's not, mm-hmm. I know what's wrong, and this is what's going to fix it. Mm-hmm. You should go do this. Mm-hmm. It's more, you know, just asking them those questions around, you know, what they're feeling, maybe why, mm-hmm. And what strategy have you found, you know, works for you. And also, I feel like this is kind of part of the learning too. So that, because mm-hmm. as an adult, I know I've been where they go, I'm going to do this, and I'm like, that's not going to work. No, but not saying that out loud, but just having that mm-hmm. thought in my head. But also thinking that, like, sometimes it does, right? Like, it's, we don't always know, no matter how many years of experience you've got working with youth. But also, it's good for their learning. You know, like that. Well, how did that work out? Was that a good strategy for you? I think it's really good for them to. Well, like all of us, we need to make those mistakes to figure out what does work for us. And maybe it didn't work at that time.
But, you know, I was thinking too, Jess, I just had a bit of an aha, but it might also work when, so I'm thinking of students, your kids, whatever, who kind of are always thinking the same thing, and we might be going down the path of avoiding. So I'm thinking of, you know, some kids who never want to do gym, so we always give them, you know, something else. So then what we might be able to do is, you know, work with them to, you know, to provide some choices around, again, being uncomfortable, mm-hmm. right, and finding a way to, right, building it in that way. Like, so, and, you know, you may have to get to a point where, you know, some of those choices maybe are not available
mm-hmm.
Sometimes, because that is also, you know, a way that we learn and grow, and how we help kids learn and grow, is that we can't always avoid, you can't always not do gym for the rest of your life, right? So how are we going to do it? What's it going to look like? I remember working with a student who, again, on the spectrum, but, you know, who couldn't enter the gym, right? Like, at all, could not enter the gym. It was too much. So we brought the chair, you know, beside the door to the gym, and then they could sit and be in the chair and watch gym. So that was a step towards, but we didn't say we don't have to go to gym or never go to gym, right? So we have to figure this out, and it's about teaching some of those skills and strategies. These are great resources to do that.
Yeah, and I was just thinking one of the, like, the, so for our youth, we're hoping that build the skills and then have developed that toolbox that'll change as through our whole lives, right? Will always change. And then as our job kind of an adults to model those strategies, to kind of maybe somebody's even talk through those thoughts you're having around, oh, I'm noticing I'm feeling like this, so I think I'm going to do this right now, and so that students can see, or young students can see that how we kind of work through that, which can be difficult, because I think we do it unconsciously sometimes. So it's important to be able to, yeah.
I'm looking at the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Have you got?
We're on our last slide.
Seriously,
because I was going to ask you a question.
Just skip
the next
one.
Yeah. Just some ideas for, you know,
take a break.
All the different strategies you might, you know, have. And then the last one is Martin Broken Legs.
This one here.
Yeah, Circle of Courage.
Yeah.
And so he developed this with a team of youth workers who are working with youth at risk. And it's a model of resilience. So it's based around this idea that we have these four main universal needs. So with that sense of belonging, to be able to master something, or have many things in our life that we feel mastery around, that we can do, confident that we can do. You know, setting goals, right, and meeting those. Independence, we can do it, you know, can do things on our own, we can discipline ourselves. And generosity. We can contribute to others, and we can give cherished things to others. And so as a teacher, I always see this as a reminder that I need to make sure I create these opportunities in my classroom for students to experience that, to make sure that they all have an opportunity to experience like all of these things. Yeah, so one, the classroom belonging, or, you know, as a parent, even, you know, that family belonging, that mastery, that noticing that, you know, or working towards something to be really good at, regardless of what it is. And this one I thought was really important, because we don't often think about this one, especially with kids. Like, they want to give back and they want to be generous. And I taught 4 or 5 a lot, grades 4 or 5. I always find that's an age where they're just like, give it, I'm ready, I wanna contribute back, I wanna do something more. I had a big grade 4 or 5 class on Pender, and we were fundraising to go to Strathcona to go to camp. And we had, I was in contact with some of our community groups, like the New View over there, and the Legion, and other ones about donating for this. And the kids were doing movie nights, bake sales, and a few other things. And so I remember getting the box and for the bake sale, and they had all brought stuff, and I brought it into the room. And one of my students was like, okay, we're good. And I'm like, okay. And then I went off to the staff room. So it's like, they don't need me. They don't want me there now. Right? Because they're ready to be independent and, probably a little generous, probably give a little extras to the kindergarten. And And I think the only slide we missed...
Yeah.
Not very important.
Well, this was right, was those SEL resources, yeah.
The other thing I wanted to add is using text. And one way I've seen text being used that really help is talking about, if we're not ready to talk about how we're feeling, we could talk about how a character is feeling in a book, and how, you know, what zone is, you know, is he in right now, or in this part of the story, and what strategy, you know, what happens to him, or what, you know, strategies. But even just for emotional awareness, that can be really helpful. And I have a whole list of things around, you know, classroom things like morning meetings, student check-ins, practicing problem solving together, listening to each other. And the importance, especially as we get older, as youth, around our identity, really, you know, it's really exploring who they are, what they want to be. So developing interests, sense of purpose, integrating personal, social identities, creative pursuits, being able to set personal goals, that sort of thing.
And I would say that, like, you know, teaching middle school, I read to my kids.
Oh.
So stories are not necessarily just for little ones.
I read to the pre-service teachers.
Yeah. I think, and I mean, I read to my team.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I would find a book that was just, and actually we read The Invisible Boy, that reminded
mm-hmm.
me. Yeah, but just, you know, I think everybody enjoys a good story. It's not just for the little ones, so,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it starts a conversation,
it's
right?
It's a
good
conversation.
Yeah.
Big ideas and
something
really love in it. Yeah, all sorts of things come from that.
Yeah.
I have a question for you with regards to these great tools. How does it work for parents? So the kids are getting all these great resources and they're getting a language either visually or verbally, but parents are... They probably have more knowledge than parents do about this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
How do you mix that, close that gap? When kids go home,
they do parent nights.
Yeah, parent nights.
Definitely. And then often I see like teachers communicating this through newsletters.
Okay.
And then often an encouraging, you know, encouraging discussion. Like if they're doing zones of regulation, they might encourage students to go home and have a conversation to your parents about this, or send an email to parents. Oh, you know, have a conversation with your child about this. So there's, you know, things like that, and also I guess just sharing resources too, because all of those sites and everything are have resources for parents, not just for for teachers. Yeah,
and a school will have their own website, like specific to that school, but what they're working on. So maybe you do have a school that's brought in Martin Broken Leg and is working on that resource, so then it will get shared that way. But it is often through, you know, so the website or, you know, newsletters and things like that teachers will share that. So yeah. And I mean, we just tried to, we talked about having our umbrella in terms of what we were hoping that everybody would get out of this. And we just, at the end of our working on this presentation together, we just sort of put in a few things that we thought, you know, hopefully you took from it in terms of trying to rush through all the things that we shared. So I hope we hit the mark. And we're wondering if you have any questions.
Well, I'm glad that you're reticent around screenshots or however that's going
within the whole the whole presentation. It'll just be in a PDF. And then you
that's
get all the links should work to check out any of those resources.
You're gonna do it through a little tiny
I also did
yeah.
So there'll be a link to the website, but I also made a tiny URL, which is like taking the big URL that it, you know, the web address that it's assigned to and making it little. So I could give you this or give you the URL, because it's just tinyurl.com/miyouthmh, so Maine Island Mental Health. So you get access to it when you go home. So I'll have that written down there.
Where is that deposited? Like, how do you?
So
how does that work?
It's uploaded in like to Google Drive.
Google Drive. Okay. Nice.
I really sometimes I think you need to bring it back to like simplicity. Like, I'm like, no, the parents and the teachers and the admin are also having mental health and wellness. Like, it's such a community thing.
Yeah.
So just kind of bringing it back to the basics of like, are you in nature? Are you playing? Are you singing? Are you dancing? Did you go for a walk? I feel really fortunate in the school I work at that we have that access. So we have a farm across the street. We have a river. It can be like, Miss Bodie's taking the whole school on a mental health walk.
Yeah.
And then I talk to my other teacher colleagues. So they're like, maybe even at like same private schools, but they're more like, we can't just leave the school. Like, what are you talking about? I'm like, well, how's everybody's mental health? Like, can we just like...
Yeah.
So it's nice, because it can be overwhelming. I'm not a parent, but I refer a lot to parents, and it's like, here's these millions of books and movies that you have no time to read, and here's this, like, refer to something you're going to be on a wait list for forever.
Mm-hmm.
So how can you do these little things now? Like, one teacher told a cute story about just suggesting the kid was having problems with the reading, and they're like, why don't you go back to reading at night? And they're like, oh, we used to do that. We should do that. And just these little things that are important or being read aloud to, like, everybody.
I remember that. I know, but I never forget, my 16-year-old said, like, I don't remember how she put it, but anyways, she loves to play games. So I said to her, okay, put the blanket out in the backyard. She's 16. Blanket out in the backyard. I said, you pick your top three games, and that's what we'll do. So she picked, like, guess who?
Yes.
Okay, she's 16. Snakes and Ladders. Right? I can't even remember what the other one was, but the ones that she went to, right? So it's very, it's just simple things, right? All we did was just sit on the blanket, play.
And sometimes, like, parents and teachers are overwhelmed, like, I can't teach about mental health, or what do I do in this? Because, like, we're all counselors, we're all mental health experts. Like, teachers notoriously do the same around like Indigenous Ed or LGBTQ+ or all those topics, and it's just such an easy place to go to. Like, I'm not the expert. It's like, no, we are. Like, we just have to keep it like simple and listen.
Mm-hmm. That's a great comment. Yeah, it's so true, right?
But you're right. It doesn't have to be complicated.
Right.
I mean,
no.
That's even what we're all trained in. Like, these simple things, right?
Mm-hmm.
That noticing and then having some of these strategies that we know are good ways to connect with each other. And hopefully that's more reassuring sometimes too. Hey, that our job is universal supports, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that we do have professionals for people who need more.
Mm-hmm.
But we should all, as adults, you know, I'm thinking we can use any of these. as adults, not just with our kids. Hey? Yeah.
Mm. Or even like showing kids that, like
Like we're doing it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We talk about their executive functions and mm-hmm. things like if you're not flexible, then so I'll always like joke with them. I'll be like, which one do you think the spot needs to work on? They're like, cognitive flexibility. And I'm like, yeah. Exactly. Because like they can see me for years being like, no, the pride parade is at 2. Like, no, the spot is at 2:15. Okay, let's be flexible. So I think modeling mm-hmm. is huge too.
Yes, yeah. Not being perfect.
Yeah,
that's a huge. And I did some of my actually some of my work is on fixed and growth mindset.
And
very much so. That's a huge part of my work. And that whole deal that you can learn it, you know, like you may show up as being quite rigid or, you know, a controlling personality because you just get that trait. You know, that's what you got when you came out the door. But you can learn other pieces, right? And just having the tools and the language and modeling and and I think the other part that's really tough is mental health has been a siloed thing, you know? It's been this weird thing in the medical model that it's sort of taboo and it's normal, it's being human, we're a mess, and you know,
for sure. There's this really cool psychologist named Dr. Haley, last name. She did this program called Open Parachute that's just kind of coming out to schools now, and she interviewed youth during COVID, and there is all these videos talking about their mental health. So often I would just play those videos, and then in fact your piece of like, let's talk about these kids' mental health. Nobody in this room has it. And it was really, really good.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's Open Parachute. Yeah. She's really good.
Mm. That was really great, you guys. I wish we had the room packed out, but
okay.
There we are. We'll upload the information.
I have a bunch of people that knew that I know, like, so I've sent you my ukulele group or whatever.
Yeah.
And I said, you know what, the less people I know, the better.